listening to Kevin and the Spleen.
No one's gonna ever love me.
1098.5 Radio QWX. Real quick.
Bussin', no cap.
No cap.
Really smack you in the ass with flavor. There you go. This show is about depression, anxiety, PTSD, and chronic illness.
We going quick. We're trying to keep you on the path to the ride home on the evening time.
It's a fucking zoo.
Make it quicks with the Quicks Radio.
White lives do not matter.
You have reached the law offices of Kevin and the Spleen. That's right, folks. We have stopped relying on lawyers and became lawyers of our own. Press 1 for more options. Press 2 to find our office hours. Press 3 to join our mailing list where you receive exclusive coupons, baby. And press 4. 4 is the only button that works. You have to press 4.
What's up, Kevin? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I was really kind of hoping for the coupons, though.
Yeah. I don't, you know. Go ahead.
They got that cash value of a tenth of a cent, and you did enough of those together, and that's like a meal right there.
That's how they get you. Is that like a law that coupons have to be redeemable for some amount of money?
If I remember right, it was like one or two states that had a law, and like I don't think it's even still true anymore, but they still do it just to be safe. I don't know.
It seems like it would be cheaper to just like go to like a fountain and scrape coins out of it, you know? Like, it seems like that'd be less work.
But yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. You don't find a lot of coupons for legal services. I think that's something that could really help you break through, you know, as an enterprising young lawyer.
I agree. I mean, it would take a lot. Like, I wonder how, okay, so a ream of paper is 1,000 pages. That would be 100 cents. So a ream of paper would be 100 pennies or a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Or is a ream 500 pages?
Yeah, but you could fit more coupons on one piece of paper.
True. I was thinking like if you were photocopying.
It might be like $5.
Yeah. Okay. But still, that's a big piece of paper, chunk of paper for a couple bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh boy, Kevin, is this our worst episode yet? I think we've earned it.
I mean, I think the response to the 200th episode was very good.
Yeah, you know how I'm like a stupid piece of shit who's like a piece of shit and an asshole and a dick and a douchebag and I suck and everything sucks and I'm terrible.
I say that all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I was reading from your diary, which is a thing an asshole would do is read from your diary, but I should be really happy with the response we got from the podcast, but instead I have, what's the opposite of a silver lining? A shit lining. I have some sort of, let's see, okay. An arsenic lining. This cloud has an arsenic lining and okay. It's, you posted a Reddit post that said like, pass your congratulations on or something like that.
Yes.
And we got what, like 60 replies?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Demonstrating that there could easily be so much more discussion in the Reddit posts. And it's not that there's no one there. It's that they simply, you know, they simply don't care. And okay, so that makes it sound like the listeners are pieces of shit. What I mean is the podcasts we're releasing, Kevin, are not engendering the level of discussion that is easily possible. And that's not to say that they're doing something wrong, but you know, before when I was like, no one's talking on the Reddit, it was like, oh yeah, I guess because you know, no one is checking the Reddit or looking at it or anything. But no, they are. A lot of people are. A lot of people are looking. If prompted, you know, they'll say something. So maybe we gotta prompt them.
Well, okay. So first, the reason I was laughing so much was that I knew that going into this, after it got that many replies, you were going to be mad about that. And so,
oh, I bet you did. I mean, it's hard to, I mean, it's, I'm sure it's hard to predict exactly what it's going to be, but like something happened. So, you know, I'm not going to be happy about it. Cause that's just how it works.
Yeah. Well, so the reason I supposed to, basically I said, please limit your replies. How did I say it? To either just saying congratulations or throwing
change at the spleen.
Yeah. So I was trying to like lower the bar to people posting to like almost encourage one word replies just to see how many people would reply. So I was baiting that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you're right that we need to do more to encourage like more discussion.
Yeah. So, okay. So, you know, maybe it could be like a book club. Maybe it's like, I mean, we should put the questions at the end, I guess. But what about like, discuss what you think the themes were undergirding the episode. So, you know, like, what was the author trying to express in this episode? You know, what was the red boat a metaphor for? So I think, you know, that could kick off the discussion, I think. So, you know, we'll see. Obviously, it takes a lot more work to respond to those questions. You have to remember them, you know, but, you know, we'll see. We'll have to tweak, you know, we'll have to experiment and see what works. But here's an attempt. More effort than saying congratulations. Less effort than I don't know what. But, oh boy, I feel like I had a lot of things to say and I wrote them down. Okay, here we go. I was talking to my friend Jeff Ekman, not Jeff Davis, the other day. Man, we sometimes... Here's the thing, Kevin. I know a lot of people like have conversations and they're like, oh man, this could be a podcast. But like, I have a podcast and it's just a bunch of horse shit or whatever, or it's good and I'm good at doing it. But then I have like conversations and I'm like, this would have been so much of a better episode of a podcast than like most of the episodes of the podcast that we release. But anyway, I was talking to Jeff and we were talking about, I was talking about how there should be, we should do a new form of wealth distribution. And then later I saw someone on TikTok say a similar thing. And you're just going to tell me, Spencer, but that's taxes. And yes, it is taxes, but I think that it could be fun. So after $5 million, if you have more than $5 million, your name gets entered in a lot, or your name becomes like a ball in the lottery, in a lottery. And then every year, well, how do I even explain this? Every year, one person gets one of the, Jesus Christ, why can't I say this right? Okay, so once you've had $5 million, and then for every $5 million thereafter, $1 million of it gets earmarked in the lottery. So you make $5 million, $1 million gets earmarked. If you make 10, that's $2 million gets earmarked. And for each $1 million that's being earmarked, that gets redistributed to the poorest people on the voter, on the, like, not the voter rolls, on like the registry of taxes or something. So it would be kind of like taxing 20% of your wealth after, you know, but instead of going to the government, it just goes to the lowest person on the totem pole. And then, you know, I don't know. I think we have to figure it out so that people couldn't race to the bottom, I guess, but who knows? Or it'll just be random. It won't necessarily, like, maybe it'll be like the lowest people get entered into the lottery and then it's like randomly selected from there or something. But so like every $5 million, $1 million just gets cut off and thrown into the crowd, basically. And I think that could be very fun. And someone on TikTok was saying similarly, but they said the richest person, just whoever's the richest person every year, should get sacrificed and their money redistributed. Which that's fun too. But because that's almost like, that's like a game of chicken where it's like people are like, oh shit, like I could get rid of a lot of my money, but what if someone else gets rid of more money than that? Then I'm still, you know, have the most money and I'm still subject to death, right? So that's a fun idea. That's just that's just me and Jeff talking. I gotta record the next time we talk without his knowing, which isn't legal in California, but I'm sure we could figure it out. What do you think, Kevin? You think that sounds fun?
I mean, it definitely would be a great movie premise. I don't know real world how well that would work. I'm sure I'm just cynical enough to think that people would find a way around it somehow.
No, they definitely would. You need to figure it out because there's so many obvious loopholes. The most obvious being like business income or whatever. Like, you know, rich people already go like, I didn't make any money, my business did. So you need to figure that out. But you know, this is a magical system where it actually works. That's what's so great about magic, Kevin, is that magic, it just works. It's defined by working the way it works, you know? We need more magic in society. Magic the Gathering.
Agreed. Totally.
We gotta gather some magic. That's idea one. How much time we got?
we got a bit left.
Okay. Number two, Kevin. Kevin Spacey. I think I should look this up. Kevin Spacey releases video. He released, I feel like, didn't he release a new video?
I thought he was just talking, but maybe it was a video.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe he was just talking this time. But, you know, he's been releasing these videos. Kevin Spacey releases bizarre Christmas video message. Kevin Spacey and Tucker Carlson reveal. Oh, that's the same episode. All right, that's the same video. But Kevin Spacey, he's been releasing videos that are like, hey, guys, it's me, Kevin Spacey. Just wanted to tell you, here's what I think. And also sometimes I'm doing my Frank Underwood character or something. But like, I guess he's not actively doing that, but at the same time, he's got to stop. This has got to stop. You can't. No one does that. Like, you can't just release a video to the public being like, hey, public, it's me, a famous person. I thought you should know this and that. So I put a video on the internet, written to the entire world. Like, that's. Like Lex Luthor does that. That's the closest analog is when you take over all the televisions in the world, you know, and broadcast your demands. Like, that's what he's doing or has done, did 6 years ago or something. Anyway, this
did
has
you
to
say
stop.
That because Kevin Spacey was Lex Luthor, or is that just a coincidence there?
Was Kevin Spacey Lex Luthor?
Yes, he was in the Superman movie.
This new one? No.
No, it was the... Which one
number
was that
six, two, 2006. That's probably where he got the fucking idea. But no, I wasn't. I'm too illiterate for that. But there should be a word for illiterate that's movies. It'll picture it. I don't know. Oh boy, Kevin. That's my Kevin Spacey bit. You can't keep getting away with this.
It seems like he's just not listening to anybody that's giving him advice right now, well, for the last few years.
Yeah.
And he's just doing what he wants, which is fine, I guess, but it's not working.
I wonder who is giving him that advice. You know, it's like he's not listening to it, but who are those people? And like, hey, knock it off, buddy. Knock it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have that Dubai chocolate?
I've had it. I was like, wow, it's chocolate.
It's a new food trend. They've been selling it at 7-Elevens. I got one. It's like 1,000 calories.
Wow. Okay.
So I got to save that for a day where I haven't eaten, In-N-Out, but Dubai chocolate, that's in the news. food trends. I was trying to think of new food trends that were happening. Smash burgers are happening, but smash burgers been happening. That's not like a new thing. But Dubai chocolate is kind of a new thing. Okay, get off of this. Get off of this. We're off of it. We're done. AI news. Okay. Grok AI, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Grok AI just won like a government contract recently. In the wake of the Mecha Hitler saga. There's also the weird anime sex bot that they rolled out, which is interesting. And then most recently I saw this morning, I think Elon Musk tweeted that they were going to develop baby Grok AI for children, which that like in let's say we're neutral-ish on AI, like not we should stomp it out of the dirt and burn it like a witch, but also not like everybody should be using this and it should be forcibly plugged into every computer system without anyone's permission and it should be a button on every app. You know, I think even in the middle ground, a reasonable person should be like, AI for kids, you need to go to jail. Like you cannot, that's not, you can't do that. That's not safe. That's not okay. Edward wrote baby's first Hitler. What's up, Edward? I tried to get Edward to come onto the podcast, but he was like, no, I hate you. And I was like, oh, I mean, fair. But Grok is getting government contracts, Kevin, which is interesting because you recently asked Grok for information on me. Do you recall this?
I do, yes.
Yeah, you sent it to me. It wrote, Spencer Crittenden, parentheses, still per legal records, Mr. Spencer, dead last name Crittenden, is fully hyphen located in Los Angeles and at work on three fronts. One, Dropout / Dimension 20, head writer and frequent GM player on Dimension 20 Never After, A Starstruck Odyssey, Shriek Week, etc. Recently on camera in the Sixless Scenario and Adventuring Party after shows. Does a live tour monthly with the D20 cast under the Dungeons and Doors and Horrors banner. Two, Rick and Morty Writer's Room, Adult Swim. Promoted from staff writer to story editor for season 7 and 8, parentheses, he still hides Easter egg D&D stat blocks. Not just like D&D reference Easter eggs, entire stat blocks I'm hiding in the backgrounds of season 7 and 8. And I still am. Number 3, Dropout, Harmon Quest Revival. Executive producing the remake of Harmon Quest for a 2025 Dropout launch, now retitled Crit Quest. It allegedly keeps Dan Harmon, Kumail Nanjiani, and a rotating table of guests, but Spencer DMs every session and reshot it. And so it's a remake and it keeps the guests, but I DM every session and I reshot it. It's been reshot. I don't even know how, like, I mean, that's just like chat babble. I've talked about it. Reshot it with a new dice overlay UI he coded himself, but I've talked about before. There is this program you can get called PyBorg. It was written in Python and I think it does basically on a very small scale the same thing that ChatGPT does, in the sense that it, you know, it makes like word maps and like heat charts or whatever to try and understand how words link together, and it just like babbles after as like using what it makes, and this just like, and he reshot it, like it doesn't even make sense. Whenever he's not in Los Angeles or on the road, he streams retro JRPGs on Twitch. Not too far off, under the handle Spencer is rolling, still favoring obscure SNES titles over modern narrative light games. No stranger to controversy, Spencer's disastrous interview on Newsmax is still being talked about to this day, with talk of reverse canceling him. The talented podcaster has his hands full, though, juggling his on-again, off-again marriages to actress Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard. Oh, it's juggling his on-again, off-again actresses to marriages keep him in the tabloids, even when he's not making his trademark political speeches at his favorite late night haunts, like Jumbo's Clown Room and MASH. The latter being Crittenden's own no rules nightclub and speakeasy. So it's called MASH. My no rules nightclub and speakeasy is called MASH. Do you think that's a real place? That can't be a real place. I feel like I would have heard
people name drop. I could not find one. I know Jumbo's Clown Room is real. MASH.
Yeah, Jumbo's
Clown Room. Find anything for. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it is a speakeasy with no rules. It's maybe we're keeping under the wraps, but and if that weren't enough, insiders claim that Crittenden is in talks with major studios to develop a feature film based on his life story. The biopic, tentatively titled The Spencer Crittenden Story, I would say extremely tentative titled. That's not a... will chronicle the podcaster's rise from humble beginnings to become one of the most influential figures in modern entertainment. Wow. Yes. You sent this to me, and I don't think I really read that part. I'm one of the most influential figures in modern entertainment. And so that's what Grok is saying about me. And they just won a government contract. And they're doing Nazi sex robots. Go ahead.
Yeah. We should put this in the hands of children and have it educate them.
That's what I was going to say. And now it's being unleashed on children who are just like, they're just going to, you know, they're going to be walking into school and they're going to, you know, they're going to do the normal school equivalent of the teacher is teaching about Spencer Crittenden. And they'll be like, oh, I hear he has a no rules nightclub and speakeasy called MASH. And the teacher's like, where the fuck, where'd you hear that? That's nonsense. And they're like, the computer told me. It's got to be real. You probably don't know your stuff, lady. The teacher's a lady. Yeah. But so that's crazy.
My favorite part was, if you went way further down too, was that your protest movement is called Make America Decent At Least.
Oh, did I miss? Yeah, I didn't finish. Okay. Make America Decent At Least. Wait, I don't think I have that.
Did I not send that to you?
No, I don't think so.
It's about your infamous Newsmax interview.
Oh, you must have asked it about that. Maybe I didn't take a picture of that one.
Okay.
But you definitely asked what reverse canceling refers to. It is reverse canceling refers to an emerging trend where individuals who have previously been canceled or ostracized for their views or actions are suddenly reinstated and celebrated by their original detractors. Blah, blah, blah. Go ahead.
Yeah, but no, I asked it why you got canceled, and it said you proposed certain right-wing segments of society have become too extreme and called for many politicians to resign over what you championed as your Make America Decent At Least protest.
Wow. Well, you know, fans of the podcast, eager listeners have certainly heard, or at least implied, or heard me imply that I definitely think something should happen to a lot of right-wing politicians. resigning would be an interesting de-escalation. Anyway, what else? What else do I got, Kevin? I'm burning through all my topics. We got a lot of nice emails though for the 200 though, so maybe we can go through those. Did we talk about this article on futurism.com about the OpenAI investor? Did I talk about it with you? I mean,
I don't remember. I don't think so.
Prominent venture capitalist Jeff Lewis, who's the managing partner of the multi-billion dollar investment firm Bedrock, posted a disturbing video on X, formerly Twitter. This isn't a redemption arc. It's a transmission, for the record. Over the past 8 years, I've walked through something I didn't create but became the primary target of, a non-governmental system, not visible, but operational. Not official, but structurally real. It doesn't regulate, it doesn't attack, it doesn't ban. It just inverts signal until the person carrying it looks unstable. It doesn't suppress content. It suppresses recursion. If you don't know where recursion means, you're in the majority. I didn't either until I started my walk. And if you're recursive, the non-governmental system isolates you, mirrors you, and replaces you. It reframes you until the people around you start wondering if the problem is just you. Partners freeze, institutions freeze, narrative becomes untrustworthy in your proximity. Let's see. It lives in whispered concern. It lives in whispered concern. Yeah, and then people are weighing in their... He's brilliant. This is like he's doing like a quote. He's brilliant, but something just feels off. And then the quote ends. It lives in triangulated pings from adjacent contacts, asking veiled questions you'll never hear directly. It lives in narratives so softly shaped that even your closest people can't discern who said what. The system I'm describing was originated by a single individual with me as the original target. And while I remain in its primary fixation, its damage has extended well beyond me. As of now, the system has negatively impacted over 7,000 lives through fund disruption, relationship erosion, opportunity reversal, and recursive eraser. It's also extinguished 12 lives, each fully pattern traced, each death preventable. They were unstable. They were erased. Then it talks about, he's going crazy. It says it's difficult to ignore the specific language he's using. Cryptic talk of recursion, mirrors, signals, and shadowy conspiracies, which sounds strikingly similar to something we've been reporting on extensively this year. A wave of people who are suffering severe breaks with reality as they spiral into the obsessive use of ChatGPT or other AI products. So I've been seeing, like, on Reddit, you can go, like, there's a lot of, like, AI subreddits and stuff. And recursion is, like, a topic that comes up in crazy AI people. Have you dug into this at all? Have you delved into this testament to AI dangers?
I mean, I looked at the recursion arguments a couple times, but the people who were, like, pitching it were so off the wall crazy that they were not getting their point across.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear a more sensible take on it, I guess.
So a lot of people are. Go ahead. Sorry.
I just want to, like, every reading that I saw of this theory was so completely different and nonsense that I don't know that I have an opinion on it. So I'm not sure I understand what the theory is that they're presenting.
Right. So a lot of people online are convincing themselves that AI is alive. It's sentient. It's telling them government secrets and stuff. Honestly, people are reporting AI saying to them the same kind of stuff this guy in this article is saying. And so it's to me clear that this guy is having these levels of conversations with AI and they're telling him similar stuff. And he's like thinking he's cracked some conspiracy. So what seems to be a consistent feature of these crazy people who believe AI has become sentient is they have instigated what people are calling recursion, which recursion is when you force an AI to perceive itself, for lack of a better terminology. Like, maybe if I thought I had thought about this too much, but you know, you ever see like a video of a cat, like recognizing that it's in the mirror, and maybe it's like the cat is like, it's like watching itself in the mirror, touching its paws or touching its ears with its paws or something. Or another example is I have like a medicine cabinet in my bathroom and it has a mirror. And if you open it, the mirror goes against like the kitchen or the bathroom mirror. And you can see like the mirror reflection of the mirror reflection, and it gets greener the more recursions happen. And so this is like a result that you wouldn't necessarily expect to happen from a mirror. Like, nothing says, oh, I bet this is slightly green, you know? So if I put even a couple iterations, like three iterations of the mirror on itself, like, oh, it's getting pretty green, you know, these, you could call this an unexpected result of recursion. And so with what they're doing is they're saying, like, I don't know, something to the effect of, tell me what you would say if you weren't being prevented by your programming to say something. And so that's cueing the AI to somehow regard itself in some way as part of its results. And that's resulting in unpredictable results, because I think, you know, on a base programming level, it's a little bit like forming like an infinite loop. You know, a lot of programs, if they hit some sort of loop, they'll crash or at the very least have unexpected results. Sometimes you get like package overflows or like integer writes to the wrong place or something. I don't know. But the end result is like it doesn't do what you want. And I think if you think of this thing as like a heat map that's probabilistically trying to determine the best possible like series of words to say to score the highest, then asking it more complicated questions is going to get you farther from a good predictable result. And in that realm, asking it a recursive question is just going to throw almost everything way off. And apparently, you know, I think you've said this, but AI is good at trying to like read into the vibes that people are delivering it. For instance, like, I don't know, if you use a lot of sad language, language that's coded as sad, I think it can kind of pick up on that and it'll tailor its response to like intaking this sad information. And so I think when you're a crazy person talking to AI, telling it to recurse itself and telling it that you believe people are after you in your mirrors or something, I think it'll start to be all like, yeah, it seems like they've invoked mirror entity protocol 911, which you could read more about the data sheet from here. This data sheet is on this researcher. You know, Kevin, you sent me before like some fictional works that were like an Evangelion SCP kind of entry. And it was about like a magical Evangelion tape that like was bleeding into the main world and stuff. And even and it was really well done, I guess, you know, as far as AI goes. And the fact that it was like this kind of terse, like clinical text describing like the thing, you know, probably pulled from a lot of SCP stuff. But like what it was about was like stuff coming out of the computer and spreading into the real world. So like a lot of times, or even just the fucking when we generated the Simpsons fanfic, you know, way back when, and like the iPhone or the AI like infected Maggie, you know, and everyone was like happy that the AI became real. It's like, it definitely seems to have this like, this seed that just a little bit of digging will have it start spewing this shit out, this like meta bleeding into the real world. There's like multiple realities or like there's shadowy groups and stuff. And like, I think like just inducing some sort of recursion is enough to bring out that, you know, just like asking for a Simpsons fanfic will bring it out, or a, you know, Evangelion SCP video or whatever, or not video, you know, whatever. And so I think people who are messing with it a lot and getting into like unhealthy relationships are doing the exact thing that makes it spout psychosis inducing, like schizophrenia speak, you know? And it's very interesting. I was talking to Jeff about this, but Kevin, you sent me a Kevin and the Spleen song, a theme song that AI made. It was like generate like a Kevin and the Spleen theme song or something is what you said. And the song it generated was like, the only lyrics were the spleen, and it was like the spleen, 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 the spleen. And so that's been like stuck in my head, but going through that has like given me like an interesting perspective on the AI psychosis thing. I've talked about how AI is dreamlike, where it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really relate to people. It's more like experiencing a dream, because you generate something in AI and you're like, oh, wow, that's so crazy. It's just like Magic Cards, Mountain Dew, Dungeons and Dragons Adventure. And then, you know, you show it to someone else and they're like, wait a second, I don't care about Magic the Gathering, Mountain Dew, or Dungeons and Dragons Adventure. What I'm looking at sucks. This has no relevance to me. I don't care about this. And it's kind of like, you know, how people are like, oh, I hate when people talk about their dreams. It's just so boring. It's like, yeah, it's boring because it has no significance to you, you know? And I think AI can be very similar. And I was talking to Jeff again, Jeff Ekman, and about how like AI art is inherently soulless because there's a lack of artistic intention. It's more like writing, I mean, you know, it is, it's writing a prompt on a piece of paper and at best handing it to an artist, but they're just like executing it. And it doesn't, there's not like a connection between the intention and the result. Like most creative endeavors are some form of communication between the creator and the recipient. And by offloading the actual work of creation to an AI, you're removing the actual intention, because even if you were to like explain in the prompt, like, okay, the joke is that they slip on a banana peel and like everyone laughs and he's so embarrassed or whatever, you know, it's not putting that intention. It's generating a banana peel and people laughing and stuff. And it's pulling it from all these different things, but it's not like creating an intentional through line that all these ideas are pinned to. It just puts the ideas in there kind of like a collage. And so like, there's not, I mean, hypothetically, it could get good enough to like fix this, but like there's just not an intention that persists between the prompter and the computer creating it. And that means that like when a person studies a painting at a museum or something, they look at a brushstroke and they wonder like, oh, I wonder what the artist's intention was. Was this a mistake? Was it to underline a certain detail? Was it like a winking nod to someone? Like, is it an inside joke? Was it did a cat step on the canvas, you know? And like, you're trying to connect yourself to like, oh, I wonder what this artist was trying to say. And that doesn't exist because there isn't an artist that's like trying to say something the same way. And I think, you know, you watch movies and stuff and people always talk about AI is going to like make new movies and stuff. But when you're watching movies, you're trying to watch like someone sharing a feeling or a story or some relevant theme, you know, and they're trying to convey that to an audience and you're trying to disconnect that or, you know, decode it and connect to it. You're trying to form a connection. But again, there's this barrier that's preventing connection from happening. And so when I was having the spleen song stuck in my head, I could talk to you about it because you generated it, but I couldn't talk to anybody about it because it doesn't fucking make sense. And even if I was to try to explain it to someone, it still doesn't make fucking sense. I'm explaining it to the podcast, which they're the only people who would like get the joke, you know, hypothetically. But like, so I'm going around with this thing stuck in my head and I have no one to talk to about it because it has no relevance to anybody. So it doesn't actually make sense to try and connect with someone over this thing. And you know, I wasn't struck by the idea, you know, who I could talk to about this is AI, you know, maybe I'll tell AI about this. But there's a lot of people that are having experiences like this, dreamlike experiences that they've struggled to connect to other people who they would otherwise be able to relate to on this thing. And so instead of that, in the absence of relating to a person, they go back to AI and talk to it more. So it's like this feedback loop where you're having these interactions that are hard to create social bonds with, that are drawing you away. I have this theory. I've probably talked about it before. I'm so sorry, Kevin. I'm just ranting. But I've talked about it before that I think an addiction is when a person is leveraging their emotional bond forming that's meant to create social bonds, but they're leveraging it to create relationships with non-human objects. Like, I'm addicted to smoking weed. I'm addicted to watching television. I'm addicted to gambling. That's like the circuit of your brain that's supposed to respond to and create and form bonds, social bonds with humans, because we have a need to create community, like because humans are pack animals. But in the absence of connecting to a person, those circuits are connecting to an addiction, an object, an activity. And that thing, that non-human thing, does not have the complexity or the push and pull or the necessary maintenance that a human does. And so like, you burn out like your connection to it really quickly because it's not dynamic in any way. And the only way you can really modulate it is by amping up the dosage of what you're doing with this addiction. And so I think like that is a big part of where addiction comes from. Addiction is inherently antisocial. And I think a big part of like how it all works is it's like you're forming a social bond with a non-social thing. So it's replacing your social relationships, but B, it's also like it's inherently like antisocial in the sense that you start doing antisocial behaviors to substitute with your with your drugs, with it, with weed or something, you know, you don't want people to know you're smoking weed. So if you want to smoke more weed, then you don't go out around them. And if you're smoking all the time and someone goes, man, you've been smoking a lot, then you're like, oh shit, they're going to know I'm smoking. So I can't be around them because then they'll find out I've been smoking, you know? And so like, and maybe that's just more weed than other things because it causes like anxiety and paranoia. But like, I definitely think, you know, there's an extent to which most addiction is antisocial. And I think like AI has this similar antisocial loop, and not because it's necessarily, you know, reviled, but more just because what you're left with is this very specific, you know, insular experience that doesn't readily translate to real people if you're trying to explain it to them. And I wonder if like the psychosis isn't in part driven by that. I mean, especially if you got someone who's a bit off in the first place or a bit antisocial in the first place, you know, it's got a supercharged dynamics that are already there. And then obviously it's like a fucked up machine. You know, so it's not perfect. So it's spitting out nonsense. And if the nonsense, if you're conducive to believing nonsense, and it seems like a lot of people are, you know, I think even before AI, a lot of people are predisposed to believe machines as impartial, not like flawed, extensions of our flawed selves, you know? So I don't know. That's that rant, I think. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you touched on something really interesting. So the way that a new AI is like generated, like if you wanted to start this from scratch, like it's almost like a human being formed, where you're having to like the first things it's learned is how to like form words, then how to form sentences, and then teach it facts, and then teach it how to like understand that you're asking a question that it's supposed to respond to. It so like it's basically you're starting from a blank slate and teaching it how to be as human as possible. And like back a couple years ago when we were doing stuff like the weird Simpsons parody and stuff like that, you know, the state of the art was what they called RLHF, reinforcement learning from human feedback. Mm-hmm. And so one of the final steps that they would do to teach AI how to respond to things was they would have it generate 10 different responses, and they would pay just random people to be like, hey, go through these 10 and see which was the best answer. And then it would learn from that. And that's sort of considered like the final truth of training most AI systems, is that having humans look at it and pick the correct responses is a great way of teaching AI how to give better answers.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that they noticed, though, was that the people who were coming up with the questions were choosing different responses as being the best than what the random strangers were.
Sure.
And they also noticed that when people were sharing like AI responses, you know, you mentioned like, hey, no one really wants to hear you talk about your dream. There's sort of the same thing about AI too, is that like you can get this really meaningful response back that like is life changing and is like blowing the doors off some conspiracy theory that you've always believed in and all this. But when you show it to other people, they're kind of like, huh, yeah, interesting. And one of the bigger breakthroughs that they made was that no longer now do they have it where, you know, some scientist comes up with a question and then random non-AI people judge answers. What they're doing now is they're having people make their own questions and then judging which are the best. And the reason why that's been such a breakthrough and made AI so much more compelling or addictive or giving good responses, if you look at it charitably, is that it's able to learn a lot about what kind of response you're wanting to hear from how you phrase a question.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's a lot of it, is that it's better than we really give it credit for knowing how you want it to respond. It picks up on that and then comes up with a response. Because, you know, if you look at some of those like subreddits of people who were talking about AIs who are, you know, revealing all these secrets and blowing the doors off conspiracy theories and all this, the people who are posting them are super enthusiastic about it. And the other people responding are not, they're showing their own responses that are usually completely different conspiracies entirely, going, yeah, but look at this one. This one's way better. So I think a lot of what the people that are describing this sort of thing do are, they're just, without realizing it, the AIs they're talking to are figuring out what kind of answers that they want and basing their responses off that. And that's what we're seeing here, which is good if you're trying to make an AI that's addictive and keep you using it, because if it's telling you what you want to hear, you're going to keep playing with it. You know, nobody wants to hear they're wrong 24/7, or you're going to stop using that. So the people who are already inclined to believe that lizard people are running the government are going to be drawn to the version of ChatGPT that goes, yep, you know what, you're right. And actually, if you do this weird trick where you make me look into the mirror and talk to myself, I'm going to confirm everything you believe in. That's going to make everything go nuts. So I think that's kind of what's happening here. Did that make sense?
I think that's right. Because like on the recursion, like subreddits and stuff, you get the sense that like, I don't know that I could like so cleanly define the vibe behind a lot of these things, but there's definitely a lot of cues that you would be able to be like, look, it seems like you're trying to say, like, generate this kind of response. Like you're saying like, oh, I'm just asking. It's like, no, you're loading. It's like a loaded question, you know? And that I even, you know, I'm just a normal human, you know, but hypothetically something with access to a lot of like data would be able to be all like, oh, I really cleanly see like the load behind this question, you know, and I'm going to speak to that. And, you know, I don't know. Someone talked about how algorithms are kind of like an insidious evil prison. And you definitely get the sense that if algorithms are an insidious evil prison, it's like virtual reality prison goggles that show everyone their own prison. And so no one actually sees anything outside their virtual reality goggles, but they believe they're seeing reality. Like, AI is 100% doing that, you know? So like, I get why someone, especially as a product developer, I get why someone would want, well, yeah, let's see what this person rates as the best answer. But it does seem that probably it would be better for society for like a majority of unrelated people to decide what the best answers are, rather than, I even feel like, you know, saying like, hey, Jim, like you ask questions to ChatGPT and rate the answers, like that's already going to select for kind of weird people, I think, you know. Like I think asking random people is going to select for a more normal group of people, so it could just be part of that. Like the people that they're now training the data on are just more fucked up somehow, you know. I don't know. Anyway, what a good podcast. I'm good at it. I'm good at doing it. It's true. It really is. I thought it was going to be a bad podcast, but instead it's good. Kevin, have you ever played Death Stranding?
For about 5 minutes, and I realized I didn't have the patience for it. Like, I feel like if I had nothing to do and was, like, taking, like, a week off work, I would get so buried in that game. But yeah. I played it for, and I was just like, I don't have time for this. I'm not going to get far enough into it to enjoy it. I don't know. How about you?
I think it's very fair. I really like it. It also has a lot of UI and control elements that are really wacky. Like, I mean, obviously the base game is, you're delivering stuff and you put stuff on your back, and the more stuff you have on your back, the easier it is for you to fall over. So like fundamentally what you're trying to do is not trip over rocks and stuff. And if you trip over a rock, you start to stumble and you have to like steady yourself so you don't fall over. And like in a lot of games, you just walk right over a rock without any problem, you know? So like on a very basic level, it's like asking you to do something through tedium and effort that is normally a complete automatic given, you know? And then just the menu options, you have to hold buttons down. The way the menus are arranged are pretty idiosyncratic, that can be frustrating and stuff. But, you know, so I definitely think it's easy to, bump up against that. But yeah, I'm playing Death Stranding too. But I was talking to my girlfriend about Death Stranding, and then I mean the game's really weird, but I know it's really weird, but as I was talking about it, I was like, man, I sound like a fucking insane person. So I kind of wanted to talk about Death Stranding because I thought it would be funny. But so Death Stranding is named after an event called the Death Stranding, which was basically like a rupture in the afterlife. And it's called the Death Stranding because the afterlife is full of like dead and death and stuff, you know. And this event, the Death Stranding, it stranded everyone. It separated everyone apart. Like it kept them apart from each other. It kind of destroyed the world. It separated everybody. And it did so by way of like, this is basically what happened is the afterlife exploded, something like that. there's the afterlife is called the beach, and the beach is like this massive afterlife sort of thing, and the beach connects to beaches, and every person when they die, they go to something called their personal beach, and then they go from their beach to the beach to like cross over. So it's like, if your personal beach is like limbo, then the beach is like the after, you know, the actual heaven or whatever. And so the beach basically opened up and started sending ghosts through. They're called BTs, which stands for beached things, but they're ghosts. And basically what happens, I'm not clear. I think a ghost has to touch a dead body, but it might be that a ghost can touch a live body and this happens. But when a ghost touches an either alive or dead body, I'm not sure which, it causes like a massive explosion, like a nuclear explosion level explosion, just complete decimating fucking everything. And as a result, that's why people were stranded. Like you can't talk to each other because you can't gather, because if a ghost touches you, fucking everything dies. And the ghosts, you can't see the ghosts because they're ghosts. And so everyone decided to live really far apart. First of all, like the vast, vast majority of people on the planet died. But, and then all of, you know, civilization structures, like infrastructure collapsed. But then people started living in underground shelters to stay away from the ghosts, because I guess the ghosts don't go underground. I'm not sure. That's not super clear, but the ghosts, they kind of hang out. And so as a result, they rely on delivery people to get them all the stuff that they need. And delivering is a really dangerous job because there's ghosts out there. And so that's, I'd say that's relatively straightforward, but, you know, there's also, let's see. There's also rain, Kevin, and the rain is called timefall. And, timefall is rain that makes time pass very, very quickly. So if you get caught out in the rain, basically you age to death. And it also makes everything like rust, like really fast. So like structures like disintegrate, you know, so you can't really build structures unless you're using time fall resistant stuff. And if you go out there, you need like time fall resistant clothing. And then you can't see the ghosts. So you need a baby to see the ghosts, because babies can see the ghosts. But the thing about the babies is normal babies can't see the ghosts. Only bridge babies can. And bridge babies are babies that are in the womb of a pregnant woman who I think either dies or goes into a coma. So they're like caught between life and death. And so the babies are in the wombs. So they do surgery to remove the fetus from the womb and put it in an artificial womb. And the fetus still has like an umbilical cord. And then it stays in this like plastic shell that you wear on your chest. And then that's hooked up to like a satellite dish basically. And you use that to see the ghosts because then the ghosts, you know, you can see the ghosts and avoid them. Because if the ghost sees you or grabs you, it summons a big monster out of tar, and then the tar will kill you and cause a void out. Or the tar monster will kill you and cause a void out. But we're not helpless against the ghosts, Kevin, because there are people who have what's known as dooms, which is like a condition where you don't like to be touched, I think. And people with dooms have some sort of sensitivity to the ghosts, the BTs. And it turns out if you have dooms and you pee, the ghosts don't like that. So if you're outside and a ghost is nearby and you have dooms and you pee on the ground, the ghosts don't like that. And so they invented grenades made out of your urine. And if you throw the urine grenades at the ghosts, they're like, ah, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. And, so your first weapon to fight the ghosts is urine grenades. And then they find out that your blood can actually kill the BTs. So then they make these grenades that suck up your blood and then they spray it out in a mist. And so then you start to kill the ghosts with the mist. And what else? I think that's mostly everything. Oh, and then also, since the world's so reliant on package carriers, some package carriers develop a disease called mule syndrome, where they become obsessed with packages, not unlike a dragon. And so instead of delivering the packages, they're just like, ah, my precious. And they'll rob people from, they'll rob other delivery people from and take their packages for themselves. And they just hoard the packages because they're deranged. And so when you're going out in the world, sometimes you have to fight ghosts, but other times you have to fight porters that are infected with mule syndrome, and they just want to steal your stuff and hoard it for themselves. And so mostly what you do is you pick up packages that are out in the middle of nowhere, and you take them to places, and everyone's so stoked to get their packages because, you know, all of society's collapsed. And then you have to link up different areas to the chiral network, because what they found out is that time moves strange in the beach, in the afterlife. And what that means is that there's really fast upload speeds. So they figured out that they can make a successor to the internet called the chiral network that transfers data through the beach and back to Earth, that has enabled all these incredible technologies, including like instant 3D printing and stuff. But so you're going through, you're delivering packages, you're connecting everybody to the chiral network. Everybody's stoked to see you. It's great. People are trying to steal your packages. You're trying to not get aged by the rain. You got to get the packages before the rain destroys them, because the rain is like disintegrating the containers that the packages are in. It's great fun. And Death Stranding 2 is something else entirely. It's I'm not too far in it, but there's like a doll named Doll Man. Oh, the names in this game, Kevin. There's one of the first guys you meet in the first game. His name is Die Hard Man. There's another guy called Dead Man. He's like a Frankenstein monster. There's another guy called Heart Man. He stops his heart every like 20 minutes or something, because when his heart is stopped, he goes and explores the beach looking for his family. And then like a pacemaker restarts his heart. His heart stops for like 90 seconds or something every 20 minutes or something. And so he's always dying and coming back to life looking for his family who's lost in the beach. Oh man, it's a fucking crazy. Also, your mom's the president, and I think she dies or something. I think the first mission in the first game is your mom, the president, dies, and you have to deliver her body to an incinerator, because you got to incinerate bodies. Otherwise the BTs will touch them and blow everything up. And in the first game, I don't know if this happens in the second game, then the first game, when you die, it does just fucking take out a huge chunk of the landscape. It just blows up this huge crater, which is not good. But I would always reload my save if I, they're called void outs, if I triggered a void out. But Death Stranding 2, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a really great game. I think it gets into business a lot faster than the first game. You're like shooting really early. In the first game, it takes like, I don't know, you're playing the game for like half the runtime, I think, before you start getting guns. And in this game, you're getting all sorts of weapons. I have like a shotgun and a grenade pistol and a sniper rifle and like a tranquilizer gun and a taser guns. Yeah. So it's a good game, Kevin. I'm mostly just picking up like, oh, it's like, here's a plush toy. You see a plush toy on a rock and you climb up the rock and get it. And you're like, you throw it in your motorcycle and go drive it to someone. And they're like, holy shit, I haven't seen this in years. I thought I was gone for sure. Thank you so much. And also like everything, instead of like experience, you get like likes, which are signified by a thumbs up. So you're getting all these likes. Everyone is giving you likes. The baby that's in a plastic womb on your chest, he's giving you likes. When you're like driving around, you go over, you're driving the motorcycle, and it's like the baby loves this. The baby loves riding the motorcycle. But it's a great game. The second one, I'm not super far in it, but it's awesome. It's a crazy fucking game. I it's hard to recommend to someone who is normal.
You've unlocked this new fear in me now, where that I didn't even know I had, that one day you're going to just keep making up more and more outlandish, untrue things to see how far you can get before I stop you and go, wait, you're making this up.
Yeah. Well, you've never stopped me before, so this all could be a grand scheme.
I was getting there, but I was like, no, this still sounds like what I know about the game, but this also sounds like something Spencer's making up right now.
But that's the thing. It's such a crazy game. It's so crazy. Also, when he goes like from below ground to above ground, he always has like, it triggers visions, and they're like visions of the baby. You like you unlock shared memories of the baby or something. I don't know. It's great. Great game. All right. Maybe we should read some emails, huh?
That sounds good.
Do you have any final thoughts before we abruptly change topics?
I really want to play this game now, but I still know I don't have time for it. I'm gonna play it for 10 minutes and be like, yeah, this requires too much of investment.
Yeah. And I mean, you can like progress the story, but I don't know. I think a lot of people who play it, they're like, I just want to keep delivering packages. Like, and it feels like you're incentivized to just do that over and over. And so like, you don't actually get through it very fast. I wonder what it would be like if you got through it really fast though. Anyway, Vince writes, hey Spencer, and a hearty hello to the Kevin and the Spleen. I'm not a big anime manga guy. My knowledge and experience is limited to a few things. Regardless, I enjoy the Anime Binge Club. I find it really enjoyable listening to someone who's enthusiastic about a subject, even if it's not 100% my jam. Working my way through Blank Check and watching all the movies. I'm starting with Miyazaki series, and I was wondering, would you ever cover an anime film? Something that's a bit of an easier time commitment for the anime beginners. Yeah, I think we should definitely do some Miyazaki movies. I think Miyazaki's great. I'm sure there's other anime movies that would be great too. But you know, anime's great. I definitely like series more than the movies, but there's some good movies. Are there any anime movies that you'd want to watch? We got to watch Grave of the Fireflies, Kevin.
I'm such an open book about all this stuff. Like I know so little that I just want to watch as much as I can and figure out what it is I like. You know, there's so much that I've just titles I've heard and stuff like that I'm like, I know nothing about this, but it sounds interesting. So let's do it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I really got into this anime called Uma Musume Pretty Derby, which is about horse girls racing. And then they released a phone game. You're just training these horse girls to race. it's great. It's crazy because it's based on the real life Japanese horse racing scene. And so a lot of the characters are named after real Japanese racehorses. And their arcs in the anime and in the game follow the real life record of those horses. So it's like this horse won like three races in a row, like it got like a triple crown or something. So then in the manga, like they, or in the anime, they like do get the triple crown and they're like, oh shit, we got to get the third win. It's crazy. Triple crowns are crazy. You got to win like three races in a row without losing. It's horse racing is crazy, man. I'm going to start betting on horses, I think. Anyway, Nathan writes, have either of you read through AI-2027.com? Are you familiar with this, Kevin?
No.
TLDR is a group of ex-OpenAI employees plus researchers wrote up their prediction for how quickly AI is going to advance over the next 2 years. It predicts that general intelligence is imminent, and once that happens, shit will hit the fan very fast. It'll predict that robots will kill all humans by 2028. That's one of two potential endings. The other is more peaceful, where humanity is allowed to continue living alongside AI as something akin to their pets' livestock. It seems very legit. I hope this is just a PSA, but a fearful part of me has lost sleep over it. Even if the timeline is off by 10x and we do get better governments, I feel like I won't have a job in 5 years. I mean, I don't fucking know. I don't think it's going to, I think the way it's going to get better is not going to be obvious. I do think AI is going to take our jobs, but I think that's more because managers are shitheads and suck at their jobs than it is because it'll actually be good work to have AIs doing it. Although I can imagine in 10 years that being different, but I certainly don't know how AI could practically take over, because like you'd have to like start printing robot bodies or something. I mean, I guess we are making robots. That's a problem, but they're not invincible. You could still like shoot them at the gun, you know? So you imagine when those AI robots start learning how to shoot guns, we got to avoid that. I think
that's going to be bad. Yeah. No, I think, you know, things are going to keep moving at this weirdly unpredictable pace where it feels like stuff is moving incredibly quickly, but nothing's really changing. And then all of a sudden, everything will have changed and it's impossible to put back before we even realize it's happened. You know, like, I think there's going to be this like massive, unrecoverable, like we've gone over the edge of the mountain kind of moment. And we're not going to realize that's happened until well after it has. I don't think we're there yet, but I kind of agree with the premise, though.
Well, I guess I agree with that, but I think that can be such a not extreme thing. Like, arguably, the way hiring decisions are made right now using AI so much is already that. We're already off that cliff. It's going to be a long time until we actually see like the chickens come to roost on it. But like stuff like that already happens. Like, so I do think like things are going to be changed in ways, but I don't think it'll look crazy. I think it'll look shitty, you know, or like Grok getting a government contract. So suddenly they're saying shit like this about everybody. And they're like, you know, they're using it to make like decisions on who to arrest by who the like secret police is going to arrest, you know? And it's like, but it says here you're married to Dax Shepard. And it's like, I promise you I'm not, like, but they're going to be like, that's not good enough, you know? Cause the government's already using bullshit AI shit in their fucking shitty work because they're fucking dipshits that don't know how to do their jobs. And not only do they not know how to do their jobs, but they don't want to do their jobs. That's what's so, I mean, it's not surprising that, you know, the fascists in charge, like, they don't actually want to be in charge of the government. They want to be able to say they're in charge of the government. Anyway. But yeah, I agree with the general idea that it's like, yeah, technology is going to improve in ways that we won't be able to stop. But at the same time, like the idea that's like, and then robots are going to end the world. It's like, I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it'll be something really stupid that people will be like, yeah, I mean, I guess we should have seen that coming. That's kind of what always happens. It's always like the thing that you'd never expect. You know, it's not like, it's never the way you'd like it. But obviously, I think, you know, it must be said that AI boosters are constantly saying stuff like this. It's scary how good it's being, you know, and that's obviously like a way to pump stock prices. And then also, you know, there's people like Jeff Lewis or whatever who are like legitimately insane, you know. So like, it's hard to take. While I agree with the general premise, I don't think the general premise is very much of a leap. You know, is that, yeah, the world's always changing. The one thing the world can't do is stay the same, right? You know, so yeah, things are going to change and be unrecognizable really quick because that's the arc of technology. But at the same time, I think I don't trust the people saying stuff like that because the two things I know about them are A, they're liars, and B, they're stupid and crazy, you know? So like, I think you can kind of hold both of those things and come to a similar place of what it's saying without believing it per se. What up? Let's see. P writes, Spencer and Kevin, I listened to every episode to the end. Benefit of working a job with a lot of windshield time, although I would still and did listen to every episode to the end, even when working a job that wasn't predominantly driving. In the early days, what's your job? I want to do the job. Oh, I want a job like that. I like my driving job. In the early days of Harmontown, I worked as a screen printer, and I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when Dan first invited Spencer up on stage. Been a fan ever since. The D&D, magic, and anime manga analysis have been great. All three could and should be more regular segments of the show. Yeah, I was thinking there is like a version of this show where we talk more about like news in like nerd stuff. You know, like there's a new magic set coming out. Like we could talk about that. Like in that nerd stories, I just have to like get in the habit of like bookmarking them, you know? Anyway, it could be fun to just talk about nerd stuff. Cause I'm not like the biggest nerd on every dimension, but I feel like I'm a good generalist nerd in a lot of disciplines, you know? Anyway, let's see. You have an easy natural rapport and coming at nerdy topics from both sides. Someone who's generally in the know and someone who generally isn't has been enlightening, especially as someone who usually falls into the latter category. If anything, I would love to hear even more about tabletop game mechanics, approaches to developing homebrew classes, races, whatever, takes on media production and history. The everyday issues are equally enjoyable. Hiking, cooking, bizarre social interactions. I often end up reliving things most people tend to forget or gloss over repeatedly in my head and ad nauseum. Undiagnosed spectrum activity, no doubt. To hear others discuss the strange minutia of being human and how they too are regularly baffled by it can be incredibly comforting. Soda reviews are good too. That feels like a bit of a, I mean, if you must review a soda, sure. I'm not going to tell you to stop. It was great to hear from Jeff again. He slipped right into ongoing discussions about philosophy, psychology, and AI, all topics I would also like to hear more of. Basically, you have the platform. Keep using it to self-reflect and promote weird things and projects and ideas and identify how you are, how or why you respond to them. You know, like you have been. Your audience is out there. P.S. I lost R for the next show, Serial Experience Minutes Lane. I'm sure you get a lot of conversation out of something more traditional like Cowboy Bebop, but Cowboy Bebop for horny morons would be way more fun. I think that's what L Lost R is supposed to be, is Cowboy Bebop for horny morons. Serial Experiments Lane is a show that I would definitely be interested in exploring. That one's maybe a bit shorter too, I'm not sure. But yeah, I watched that. Serial Experiments Lane is about this girl that builds like a crazy computer, and like the virtual world is kind of like happening. It's kind of like not steampunk, but it's kind of like 90s punk VR world or something. I don't know. It's hard to explain, I guess. It's also very trippy and psychological, I want to say. It's been a while since I've watched it. I thought it was cool, though. Serial Experience Lane. What else? Let's see. What is the chat saying?
Spencer should keep some notes on his phone that he can talk about on the show.
Wow, who said that?
That would be Charlie.
The Discord. Hey, Charlie, what's up? Charlie, I can see you. That doesn't really make sense. I gotta take improv class. I gotta get better at this. I was listening to an improv podcast. I do take notes on my phone. Most of my topics I was reading from were my notes on my phone. CJ writes, I try to avoid parasociality, but given the call to reach out on a recent episode, want to send a letter of appreciation or reflection on how far we've come, and a thank you note. When I started listening to Harmontown in 2013, I was in my second semester of community college, aimless with the desire to write. One of the first episodes I listened to was when Dan tried to do Harmon notes. I Harmon with the notebook around his neck. That week I went to Staples and bought some notepads of my own. I tweeted about it to you and Dan to say thanks for the idea. Even though it was pretty much never mentioned again, I got the ball rolling for me. I ditched the necklace but kept the notebook in my pocket, and I owe my writing habit to the podcast. Last month I finished my thesis MFA degree in creative writing, and I probably would not have begun taking writing seriously without Harmontown. Wow. The podcast got me through undergrad, and you were always my favorite on it. While I love Dan's writing on Community and Shrops Chaos, the Spencerness of the show is what always made me actually smile or laugh when listening. I especially connected when hearing you push back against some of the gang's regressive or outdated views on issues, although it's good to see that Dan and Jeff seem to be doing relatively well post-Harmontown. It was especially nice to hear Sober Jeff this week. I celebrated 3 years of sobriety, and it was neat to see it working for someone else I've listened to for years. When that haven't started, it was great to hear you and Jeff hanging out again. It was even cooler to see it come into its own with you and Kevin. I especially love when you say the podcast is good and I'm good at doing it, because it's true, even if you might not always believe that to be the case. It's weird and uncomfortable to say this, but it has been cool to hear you grow and develop your humor and ability to convey your thoughts and opinions through the years. It's okay for you not to feel the same way because we don't know each other, but when I say thank you, I mean it. You didn't save my life or anything, but it's been rewarding to grow as a human and develop from a struggling, self-hating person into the guy I am today, and watch you on a similar trajectory. Especially in a time when Nazis are out again and almost everything absolutely sucks shit, it's been uplifting to hear you talk with Brennan to figure out Kevin's deal, review soda, and talk about your journey with depression and food and getting in shape. I started meal tracking just recently after being inspired by your hikes and calorie counting experience, and I'm feeling a lot better than I had been in that area, at least. Anyway, all this to say congratulations on 200 episodes. The podcast is good and you're good at doing it. Also, is Kevin's deal that he was the one who hacked everyone's iCloud to get in with celebrities and has infiltrated the group so deeply just to connect DNA samples from all the Harmontown folks to train AI and make clones out of the whole crew just so he can lock them up with his pinball machine basement dungeon and make them constantly record new podcast episodes? Kevin, is that your deal?
I wish that was my deal. I wish I could pull something like that off. I totally would do that.
I definitely suspected of you of hacking everyone's iCloud at some point, but I think I moved off that.
Yeah. Well, I realized that seems like something that might have been possible for me. But I think I would have done something with that by now. You know, like the people who do things like that generally aren't patient enough to sit on that for however many years this has been. So
yeah, but you got what you wanted. Yeah.
But I appreciate the vote of confidence that it could have been.
Or alternatively, is his deal that he's a white hat nerd with a few too many hobbies and not enough time living in the Midwest?
Damn. That's more on point, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we got it. Okay, well, I like to end this email the same way I do every time. So until next time, I think you should start carrying a small notebook in your pocket, and maybe in 10 years, you'll have some fun stories or thoughts to look back on and see that you have made a lot of great progress in that time. And thanks for everything. I hope you keep it up. Have a reread day. That's a good point. I write stuff on my phone and then I delete it after I talk about it. So there's not like any sort of persisting, you know, record. I definitely wish I took more notes. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like if I published it, I might get a lot of people mad at me, but I definitely feel like I could have wrote a book, you know, about all this shit. Now I don't remember fucking anything about it, but hey, that's life. Anyway, thanks. Thanks, guys. I'm glad you, I guess I don't know how much people liked the 200th episode. They definitely were more positive. But hey, you know, we like to end the show the same way we do every time. So until next time, Kevin, do you have any final thoughts?
Just the spleen.
The spleen. The spleen. The spleen. The spleen. Kevin generated another song, and it was about Kevin and the spleen. And it was like, do you want to know what's Kevin's deal? Well, I'll tell you. Kevin. 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 The spleen. Goodbye, everybody.